So I've got my script here that I prepared earlier, and I didn't expect that. So I wrote on my script, "Thank you, Mr. Secretary." I crossed that out and put "apologize" above it. So I'm very sorry for what you just heard, and I want to note that the council does not condone anything that was said in last week's meeting. So yeah, I'm sorry for that. But before we get into the order of business, we will move to council announcements. Very quickly, one from me. On Thursday, we have the Lit Talk with Sir Geoffrey Donaldson, which, in my opinion, could not be better timed. Tickets, we've got a capacity of 290 in the room, so there's plenty of free tickets still available. But we have to send off the full list to the Riddle Hall, which is the venue, maybe late tomorrow. So if you're wanting to attend that but haven't got a ticket yet, please go on there and get one. The whole thing will be filmed and posted on YouTube and Spotify in case you're not there and want to listen back. Do we have any more council announcements, Dermot?
I'm Darren Levin, Social Officer. We are going to Cope's House after the debate. Maybe we are in the reserve upstairs, so if you get there before me, just say there. I'm after the horrific, my name or whatever. Also, the annual formal on the 25th of March. It is £35 for members or £40 for non-members. It's in the Ulster Reform Club, which is very lovely and fancy venue. Which is Northern Ireland's premier private members club. It'll be a much better formal dinner than you'll get anywhere else because we won't have really shit chicken, we'll have really good chicken. You can pay either on our fixer in the Litter Fix bio in the Instagram through our Linktree, or you can approach myself, President Toft, or Nella to pay in cash.
Yep, good, thank you. Do you have any more announcements? Go ahead.
Once again, asking, please pay your membership. You do actually get £5 off the formal because it's £35 for members and £40 for non-members, so it's definitely worth paying, so please pay it.
Thank you. Any more? No, doesn't look like it. Right, okay. Now we'll move on to private members' business. This is the section of the debate where you can raise anything you've seen in the news this week or something you're interested in and wish to put it before the House. Do I have any piece of private members' business, please, Ryan?
Stolen back the skulls.
Jonathan?
I blame Fintan because at 10:30 p.m. last night, Fintan stole a sign that said "Stop DUP sellout," and mere hours later, the DUP sold out.
Thank you. Any more comments on this? Go on then, Jeff.
The DUP did not sell. Geoffrey Donaldson is led by condition, and that's what he's done. He has followed condition, and he has worked with principle and conviction to secure the best possible deal for Northern Ireland. I suggest that all those who weren't present last night wait until the detail comes out, read it, analyse it, or like I did, get James to print it off with his reprinting credits, and then make a reasoned conclusion on how great Sir Geoffrey Donaldson is.
Sam?
Yes, this is of course Momentous News, a very important meeting last night, which our own Grant Warren helpfully wore a wire for the... but yes, this is long overdue, I would say. But
not the minutes, but I should say that he was officially, according to the minutes of society, wearing a wire. I'm sure he'd be absolutely thrilled to hear
that. Oh, he'd be delighted.
Yeah, tell it.
I think it's clear to people of Northern Ireland that the GUP have taken part in the surrender strategy. And that we ought to oppose the protocol with every fibre of our beings. And I say that this House shouldn't record on the minutes. We say no surrender.
Thank you. Anyone else on this? Okay, do I have any more other piece of private members' business, please?
God, is there other news?
Is there anything else in the news?
Let's have a look. I'm going to get the news. man on the crossroads are dead.
That's a fun topic.
More people in Scotland don't know what WhatsApp is. Biden says he's decided something's going to happen with the Houthis. You'll probably forget. Mysterious shipwreck washes up on Canadian coast.
We need a
No, that's actually sad, that one.
B Before I move on, does anyone else have any actual piece of bad news business? Not just reading the news.
Well, here's an important one. Woman arrested with 130 poisonous frogs.
Tom.
I was just going to mention the frog woman. No. I saw, this is going to sound awful, I saw part of the story because the rest of it was paywalled on, I think it was in the Sunday Times, obviously on Sunday, but an awful lot of universities across UK and Ireland are lowering grades for international students so as they can sort of squeeze them for extortionate fees. Queen's is one of those. What I saw on the table was for an economics degree in Queen's. Apparently it's 3 A's for you know, a UK student or an Irish student. For international students, it's, I think, 3 E's or 2 E's and a D.
Point of information, remembering that for Queen's it was 2 A's and a B, and then for international students it was 1 E.
Okay, well, this getting more informed than I am, so I actually agree. But what do we think about Queen's, our glorious institution?
I didn't have a stipend, I didn't pay to do it, I'd be paying about 4,500, so that's, you know, roughly most degrees. Like, if I was an international student, it would be 20,000 a year. So you can sort of see the financial incentive there, and for me, it would potentially be, say, 12,000 versus 16. So, I mean, am I worth 60,000 pounds? Yes. Yeah, I think it's
It kind of reminds me of last year when I spent a very brief time spent in international relations politics here at Queen's, and I had a very vicious argument with an American student who insisted that Michal Dvoradkar was the president of the United Kingdom. This is an imagine called world politics in the UK. In Northern Ireland, so I think we're really getting our money's worth, it seems.
Do we have anything else on this?
Are we scared of all international students now?
Looks like it. Okay, any more private members' business before I move on? Go on then. State your name for the minutes.
What?
State your name for the minutes, please.
It's Ben Holmes.
Thank you.
With an L. Jurgen Klopp is stepping down from Liverpool. I'm going to kill myself in disgust.
Trying to ask comments on that. Anyone on this?
Jurgen Klopp flopped off.
At the back.
So is Stephen Kenny going to take over or what?
What?
Is Stephen Kenny going to take over? Minutes.
I have a hand at the front.
Every man in my family is heartbroken.
As they should be.
Anything else on this demo?
I've noticed that people are actually asking for compassionate leave from work over this. Which I think proves that Liverpool fans are all a bunch of virgins. And that all should roll up.
Thank you. Anything else? Either on this or any new piece? No? Okay, we'll unfortunately move on to presence questions, which is one part of the business that I want to remove if I could. This is your chance to ask me anything, unfortunately, and as always, I prefer professional questions that are relevant to the society. Yes?
What is this?
You wouldn't tell me what this is outside, so I can't, I don't know. Sorry.
What?
Yes.
What's your favourite drink? Name for a minute.
Oren.
Probably vodka coke, which was not what I was drinking at 2 o'clock. It was not what I was drinking at 2 o'clock. Yeah.
Why are we here?
Because the society put out an advertisement saying that we'd be holding a debate here at this time, and all of us have nothing else to do, so thought we'd show up. Is that about it?
That's
fine.
What progress has the council made on getting a presidential aspirin
baron? I hate to tell you, Ryan, but we just had a council meeting. It was not mentioned just because of time constraints.
Okay.
But there was no deadline on your motion last week to reintroduce the honourable and most exalted bearer of the presidential ashtray, so I will endeavour to raise it at next week's council meeting and seek approval to appoint someone and maybe purchase an ashtray. Or Sam, I think, has said he's got an ashtray. He's not using.
That's
what Burford. I'll take it. Anything else before we move on?
I would like to make a slight procedural point, Mr. President, in that a member of your council made a very solemn pledge in the recent EGM and has since broken it. Training officer Mr. Jack Steele promised all of us at the election that he would wear a necktie to the debate, and he's currently wearing a cravat. He's holding a tie, but he's not wearing a tie. Well, so
right, like if we can all just wait until Jack puts his tie on, and then we can continue. Thank you very much, that was very helpful, and please leave it on for the rest of the day. Any more, Jonathan?
What are your views on fascism?
Any more?
Yes. Are you using Jurgen Klopp leaving Liverpool? Yes.
I used to be a Liverpool fan, but I am no longer, so I don't really care. Any more?
Well, who do you follow then?
Nobody.
Sam and I once entered into an agreement during the Old Firm Derby, which is Celtic and Rangers for those.
I was drunk.
And Sam and I agreed that I would support Linfield Football Club, which he and you would support Celtic. Would you enter into any kind of agreement with a member of the council for you to support Celtic Football Club?
There are many things I would rather do than support Celtic that includes screwing rusty nails into myself. So fortunately I cannot accept that, but thank you anyway. Ryan?
You say you don't eat breakfast, so I guess we have to amend the original question and ask you what is the first thing you have to eat?
Oh, this is quite bad.
He's actually fast.
You know those Malteser bunnies? One of them. About 11 o'clock. Sat on my desk calling my name, so I ate that, which is probably quite bad. Anything else before we move on? Great, thank you. So just before we go to our first speaker, I'm just going to run through the rules for the evening. A full list of rules to our standing orders is available on our website, and if anyone in the audience ever decides to speak, I would suggest you read through them ahead of making your maiden speech. But just for now, each speech is 7 minutes long, with the first and last minute being protected time. At the end of the first minute of protected time, the start of the final minute of the speech, it'll be signalled by the bell, which means you can only POI people in the middle 5 minutes of someone's speech. To POI, raise your hand and say point of information on that point, or simply POI. Please keep your POIs to 10 seconds and no barracking, meaning wait at least 15 seconds after someone has given a POI for you to give one. Once you've made your POI, you cannot go back and forth with the speaker. If you need to leave the room at any time, do so quietly between speeches. Do not leave or re-enter whilst the speaker is speaking. Remember that any noise from outside travels inside, and none of us want to listen to you, so shut up. Lastly, no swearing. If a speaker swears, they will be fined a bottle of port to be presented at the next ordinary meeting. But firstly, can we welcome our first speaker on... What?
Oh, fuck.
Sorry, I'll present myself. Okay, so the motion for this evening is this house regrets the decline of the SDLP. All in favour of the motion, please raise your hand now.
No, I'm not.
All against the motion, please raise your hand now.
Guys, they're very good information, despite the fact it's rough around for the SDL.
His brother Ram is lost for the SDL. I'm not annoyed.
And if you wish to abstain on the motion, please raise your hand now. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 6? 6. 1, 2. 5, 6.
Yeah, it's your fault.
Can we get the vote of prior opinion, please, Mr. Secretary?
No. Unless people shut up. Whilst you're president, can you shut the press? On the question, Mr. President, what joy I have saying that. There are 16 votes for aye, 12 votes for nay, 6 abstentions, so by probably, SDLP conference margin.
Now we'll actually welcome our first proposition to open the case.
Jilly Vaharja. So I'm Gwilsh of Kamai, obviously my Jaspert Samuel Ogin and you. It goes without saying that our society has a lot to thank the SDLP for. Each and every one of us has people in our lives who wouldn't be here if it weren't for the life's work of Hume, Malham and co. It is in large part, though not exclusively, due to the work of the SDLP during and in the decades leading up to the peace process that most of us here today have never had to know the constant fear of a bomb taking the life of a loved one. I've been able to live in a society not devoid of dysfunctionality, obviously, but where we at least have relative peace, something which should never be taken as a given, especially here. None of this, of course, gives the SDLP the right to a single seat vote, or even so much as a 17th preference. Those things are earned, and in order to earn the confidence of the electorate, you must, of course, prove yourself to be able to competently deliver for them and fight for their interests. It may well be argued tonight that the SDLP have all too often failed in this regard, that instead of pressing for better politics in the here and now, they have clung to hazy-eyed, romanticised nostalgia for the sense of hope that they managed to bring 26-odd years ago. And perhaps to some degree, the Stoops have been guilty of this. Perhaps this, the occasional policy issue, questionable political partnership, as well as simple issues of branding, structure and organisation have all lent themselves to the party's rather depressing, in my opinion, decline. Today, however, I hope to argue that the decline of the SDLP is something that we should regret, that their decline has been detrimental to Northern politics, and also argue that a reversal of said decline would be to our society's benefit, as going forward, I believe that the party has a vital role to play in the future of politics on this island. To begin with, I would like to look briefly at the SDLP's record with a focus on the period under Eastwood's leadership, for obvious reasons. As a result of the hard work of Nicola Mallon during her brief tenure as Infrastructure Minister, work on the All Ireland Rail Review has finally begun. While it was disappointing to see areas such as Downpatrick and the perpetually forgotten Donegal neglected, this is a vital step in bringing us into alignment with many of our European neighbours in providing sustainable, environmentally friendly and reliable public transport in Ireland, and one which the SDLP were at the forefront of pushing for. The party has been staunch defenders of the rights of the LGBTQ plus community.
Both that point?
Yeah.
Do you think they were staunch defenders of the LGBTQ plus community whenever both Margaret Ritchie and her and Alistair MacDonald both abstained from gay marriage in the UK?
No, that was wrong. I think generally their record since about 2015 has been quite good, although yes, there are spotty points. I'm not going to defend them on that. Both in pushing for marriage equality, as well as recently unanimously passing a motion by then youth chair Carl Duncan to oppose transphobia at the most recent Ardèche conference, whatever. In 2022, Pat Catney successfully.
On that point?
Yes.
Do you think whenever Charlotte Carson, the candidate for East Belfast.
That was wrong. She's one council candidate who's not elected, so, you know, fair point. In 2022, Pat Catney successfully brought forward a bill in the Assembly to mandate the provision of free period products in schools and public bathrooms, and newly elected Councillor Paul Doherty is by any measure just about the best rep any party could hope for in council, helping countless families in need with his food bank, providing food, school uniforms, English language classes to support asylum seekers and refugees, and helping to foster the Irish language with Bunrang and Gaeilge.
On that point?
No. And then there's the party's two lovely, wonderful, amazing MPs. Now, abstentionism made perfect sense when Republicans were actively trying to subvert Westminster by setting up a new parliament. That's not where we're at today. It is true that NI's representation in Westminster is woeful. Less than Louth has in the Dáil, and all the more reason to get us out of there. But I would like to highlight that from 2017 to 2019, during the mess of the Brexit negotiations, due to the election of exclusively abstentionist MPs on the nationalist side, NI was represented 10-1 by hardcore Brexiteers. I would contend that this was a bad thing. Many of the most effective nationalist leaders, from Parnell to Hume, have stood up for us in the belly of the beast. Indeed, again, demonstrating the potential effectiveness of MPs from the island of Ireland, the DUP's presence has made itself felt in Westminster in recent history with the Competence and Supply Agreement. Yes.
Yes, opening now of two MPs, and this was prior to the passing of the Brexit referendum. They in fact ran upon the policy of stopping Brexit. How is that getting off them now?
Not wonderful. the point I'm making isn't that Northern Irish MPs can, like, you know, stop Brexit necessarily, but that they can have an influence and historically have. You know, over the last few years in Westminster, the SDLP have been welcome voices challenging the Tories' god-awful economics, their disregard for the climate emergency, contempt for international human rights bodies and pushing for the Rwanda Bill, vile rhetoric surrounding refugees who we have a moral duty as humans to help, as well as being welcome voices against the genocide unfurling before us in Gaza. It would be a shame to lose these voices, and it is a shame that we're missing out on seven extra voices for these things within Westminster. And it is feasible that there could be close votes in the future in which they could be influential. Finally, I would like to focus on the constitutional question, a question which could feasibly be put to us in the near future. I think it's about here that I realised that I had to rush down here and my speech gets a wee bit messier. I dearly hope that someday I will see the unification of this island. This is not driven by romantic nationalistic ideology, but by... Okay, I'm running out of time here. A United Ireland, I think, is a good idea. For those of us who agree, we need to recognise that in order to bring it about and actually make it work in the first place, we need to actually convince people from outside the nationalist community of its benefit. Sinn Féin, I think, are genuine in recognising that this needs to happen, but they are completely and utterly unable to do this because of the evil shit that they did and continue to glorify. The SDLP, on the other hand, have, you know, as shown by their continued standing as the most transfer-friendly party in the North, as well as their work with the New Ireland Commission, have been able to actually hold conversations with people from unionist and loyalist backgrounds in order to bring about a conversation as to how we can build a new united Ireland in which all of the people of the island, in all their diverse myriad of traditions, are at home. Thank you.
Before I start, I want to sort of like address this like glitch in the matrix on the side. Alex is not me, and I am not Alex. We happen to be two people, slightly similar haircuts, slightly similar glasses, and slightly slimmer turtlenecks, but other than that, everything kind of stops stuff. Anyway, Mr. President, we'll see how we go. Mr. President, members of the proposition, members of the House, I'm going to start perhaps slightly in a strange fashion by agreeing with what has just been said. I think all of us can agree on the impact that John Hume has had on our society. During his time at the helm of the SDLP, the party, and indeed him, they were both leaders in peace and reconciliation here. Without his work and the work of his party, we may not be 25 years on from the Good Friday Agreement. We may not be a generation away from violence and suffering. Everything that Dermot said was true. Hume and Hume's party brought us here. But that's the problem. It was and remains Hume's party. While we can all appreciate the SDLP of the past, I know I do, they remain in the present, the SDLP of the past. Since then, they've lost their way, lost their reason for being, lost their footing almost entirely in electoral politics. The Stoop Down Low Party, the South Down and That Place Party have in many ways become nothing more than political shorthand for a near Shakespearean fall from grace. They themselves acknowledge the tough times that they've had in recent elections. Those are the words of their leader, not me. History judges the SDLP as one of, if not the most significant parties in the history of this island, perhaps these islands. But in future, I fear history will judge them as a party which brought us to peace and then brought themselves down. The SDLP under Hume was effectively a single-issue party in a lot of ways. Their vision for peace and their drive and passion to bring the Troubles to an end motivated their every move in politics. Their policies all had in mind in Northern Ireland free from violence and bloodshed, and we can admire them for that. As the architect of the Good Friday Agreement, we have Hume to thank for the peace that we know today that allows me, as an unprincipled cynic, to sit in a council with our training officer in the tie, Jack, the DUA's Margaret Thatcher fangirl-in-chief. I can sit in the Trust with our secretary, Ryan, the Lurifix Margaret Thatcher fangirl-in-chief, and an Englishman. And I can sit on this side of the table with our social officer now, Dermot, the Lurifix Lord Carson fangirl-in-chief, and someone who can neither confirm nor deny the whereabouts of Shergar. That spirit of cooperation, of not being concerned about someone's background, or where they come from, or where they put the horse, values which are at the core of our lives today, are directly influenced by Hume's vision for this place. The Northern Ireland Act 1998, essentially the core document of Northern Ireland, what I see as our constitution, enacted the ideas of people like Hume and Durkin. Once the new power-sharing processes got off the ground, electorally, and had its first elections, the SDLP can quickly find themselves without a core driver, without something to connect to or to connect to the electorate. The decline of the SDLP is, in part, down to the fact that they achieved what they set out to do. They haven't been able to find something since which offers that same appeal to people as we have a plan for peace. Because perhaps there's not one. Perhaps a party which rightly dedicated itself to something so huge, to fixing something almost unfixable, and indeed succeeding in it, has nothing more to give. In this sense, to regret the decline of the SDLP is in some ways to regret the role they played in bringing us to where we are today. They wouldn't be where they are because of what they did. But this is where it gets slightly more messy. Not only are the SDLP seen as the party of peace, they're also seen by many as an entitled, arrogant bunch of people who have a very limited understanding or appreciation of the people they claim to represent. Eastwood's talk of lending votes to other parties is heavy with the subtext of owning those votes. These people will come flocking back to the greener and redder pasture once they see sense. Now, Boris Johnson used slightly similar language in the 2019 election, but even he managed to present that argument with more grace than Eastwood did. Eastwood managed to have less tact somehow than the man who has an unknown number of children, who partied his way through lockdowns and killed 200,000 people, and had his government eventually toppled by standing by a sexual predator. Matthew O'Toole's civil servant-orientated sort of confusing jargon speak is at best confusing and at worst inaccessible to ordinary people who don't spend all of their time talking about politics, i.e. no one in this room. Their work is hugely undermined, I think, in a lot of ways by the fact that a party which claims to be for working-class Irish nationalists has, in Margaret Ritchie, a former leader sitting in the House of Lords. The party has clearly lost its way entirely. For too many, they can no longer be trusted to stand by what they say that they believe in. I think the issue on this is one of authenticity, which is kind of an odd political concept in that it's sort of difficult to quantify and difficult to measure, but I think you know whenever it's there and you know whenever it's not there. It's an emotional or emotive connection between the representatives and the people that they claim to represent, and once it's lost, it can be very, very hard to regain. And with the SDLP, it simply isn't there anymore.
On that point?
Yes.
You're saying that it was formerly authentic and now it's not? But I would not regret that. Is that it?
Excuse me? I'm talking about, well, the party today has lost its authenticity. Yeah, I don't think anyone can say it's a good thing. But if you want to take that, fine. But I mean, Fit and Devlin, two founders of the party, said it lost its socialism in the 70s. A lot of people would agree that it's lost its nationalism today. For the green and red party of socialism and nationalism, there's not very much left for them there. That authenticity is gone. What was once the stalwart of social democracy and civil rights is the party of lent votes, of long-winded Instagram captions, and of lords and ladies. In politics, perception is more often reality, and perception of the SDLP as an entitled, elitist, inauthentic group has caused them to suffer. And for most of that, they have no one to blame but themselves, no matter how hard they try. You'll often hear representatives of the party bemoan the St Andrews Agreement and St Andrews reforms, and I'll agree to an extent they did make it harder for the SDLP. But today, all of that fault and all of that failure at the door of St Andrews is lazy, it's petulant, it's immature, it's certainly not befitting of a serious party that wants to govern here. Yeah.
Yeah, and some people would say the criticism is that what you're saying essentially is that it fragilized the election of the First Minister in the first pass of post-election. Yeah. So I think you're slightly misconstruing the problem that some students might have with it.
I don't know if I have, in that I'm pretty sure before St Andrews we were also deeply tribal in our elections, and we have been for quite some time. The fact that maybe it gave Sinn Féin an easier foothold just means the SDLP, you need to do better. That's all it means. If you have a system in which a party benefits from something, just do better. Find something that works. This is the problem, the SDLP were stuck in that sort of past pre-St Andrews idea of what the SDLP is and what Northern Ireland needs, which were no longer the same thing. The SDLP needs to sort of move with the times, which is what I've been saying. The problem is that they haven't done that for over 30 years. As I've said, the SDLP themselves acknowledge their decline. I think Dearborn acknowledges the decline at the beginning of the speech. But for some reason, they wouldn't send someone here to speak and acknowledge it tonight. They have two MPs, due to in one constituency, Sinn Féin deciding not to run. And in the other constituency, Sinn Féin make a mistake of running one of the worst candidates I've ever seen in my entire life. He was an awful lot of ways like Dermot as a candidate for social officer, and that I'm pretty sure Ron would nearly beat her as well. They have 8 MLAs, and for context, there are 7 McSparrens, and I think about half of them are in the room tonight. They're resting on the laurels of their past, they're plagued by the failures of their present, and they're looking down the barrel of, I would say, a pretty bleak future. So my friends, tonight, do what everyone else in the North is doing, and don't vote for the SDLP. Thank you.
Pleasure to be here. So I'd actually like to consider what the House really proposes, that we regret the decline of the SDLP, presumably construing, therefore, that the opposition do not regret the decline of the SDLP. I would not be surprised if the opposition stood here today and continually rambled about the SDLP no longer being relevant, popular, being only the 5th largest party, being indistinguishable from other particular parties, or a party, and resting on John Hume's Nobel Prize, that they only exist today for factionalism, to say that we are simply not Sinn Féin, that they didn't stop Brexit. Those sentiments do not actually oppose the proposition itself. I do agree that the SDLP are no longer popular. I agree with the notion of that decline. Do I agree with the notion that the quality of their leadership has declined? Perhaps, but we're comparing it to 1998. I don't think leadership anywhere in Northern Ireland has been as good as 1998. The UUP or the SDLP. Do I agree that they're no longer relevant or necessary? I'm not so sure, but what I am saying is there are undoubtedly some ways that the SDLP has declined. The opposition would categorically emphasise those declines. But ways in which it has declined, whether it's due to the party itself or due to increased political divisions in general, which the UUP has also lost from, those are declines that are fundamentally regrettable. So, firstly, let's consider the accusation of factionalism that they are undermining the nationalist bloc against the Sinn Féin and dividing the vote. At least we're not Sinn Féin, as I said. Well, why would the same logic not apply to Sinn Féin when the SDLP was a larger party, or when they were similar in size up till 2007? Are the smaller parties always factionalist and vote splitting?
On that point.
Go ahead.
Sinn Féin was a political wing of the IRA in 1998. It's not the same. One was a violent Republican party, the other was a nationalist. It's not the same as being factionalist.
Yeah, but they definitely were factionalists. There's two factionalists of the nationalist movement. They're still technically a nationalist party. Republican is, I suppose, a subcategory of it. I'm not denying, actually, that the differences between the Sinn Féin and the SDLP have significantly decreased. I absolutely agree with that. It seems quite tribalistic, however, to support a larger party like Sinn Féin just because they are a larger party, especially when considering that when we do have the government, we have power sharing. There will always be orange and green representation, even if votes are split within each side. Now, let's consider Sinn Féin. Down south, they've actually lost significant support recently, with a fall from 29 to 25% in the past 2 months. In October, they were at a high of 32%. Now Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil are at 37%. That 25% is the lowest they've been polling since early 2020. In the North, I do agree, they are still polling comfortably in front. I am not denying that the narcissism of small differences divides many political blocs. Sinn Féin should not be the SDLP's main opponent. Let's just actually imagine a nationalist party that should lead the government, either down south or north. Would it be a party that has nearly a dozen lawsuits against supposed defamation from Irish media, a trend condemned by groups such as Reporters Without Borders, and the Index on Censorship? Would it be a party that, similarly to Boris Johnson during Partygate, grossly ignored lockdown rules at the height of a pandemic during a massively attended funeral? They're still, of course, committing to the dogma of abstentionism, which is, again, a distinction. It's a clear distinction with the SDLP. Sinn Féin being the practical choice for the largest party, sure, I mean, it's realistic. You could even say it's pragmatic for nationalists, but I don't think it's ideal per se. The topic is fundamentally about the decline of the SDLP, and I regret such a decline and acknowledge that it is perhaps unrealistic for them to return to the mainstream. I fundamentally believe that, however, if a border poll happens, the SDLP would do more of a good cause for United Ireland than Sinn Féin. Certainly,
on that point.
No thanks. Certainly with convincing the unionist and undecided side. As much as I would like to see in the United Ireland personally, quite frankly, we must consider that 51% oppose it currently and only 30% support it in the North. With the rest undecided. I don't buy whatsoever that a hard-line, revanchist attitude will win that additional 20% to attain a majority. Do you know that the pro-United Ireland figure was over 40% in the polls 3 years ago?
On that point.
Go ahead.
How are the SDLP going to get unionists to vote for United Ireland when they can't get nationalists to vote for the SDLP?
Well, I mean, the border poll isn't really in the conversation at all. We're talking like 10 years down the line, potentially. If there is going to be unionist support for a United Ireland, it's not going to be through. It's not going to be convinced. They're not going to be convinced by Sinn Féin. They will be convinced by a moderate, sort of pragmatic party like the SDLP. That's what I'm basically saying. Anyway, since the 40% in the polls 3 years ago, we've seen the DUP collapse the government, the cost of living crisis, and the passing of the universally opposed Troubles Legacy Bill. Yet support for independence from an increasingly distant Britain has fallen. Nationalists, I think, must realise that, and I think the SDLP are more suited. The notion of the SDLP as being a moderate party, I'm not denying that, but that doesn't mean they're a mild party by any means, without strong opinions. Colmeeswood recently took the initiative to boycott, unlike Sinn Féin, a St. Patrick's Day trip across the pond to Washington, in what I think is a much more effective protest than shaking hands with Biden regarding the bloodshed in Gaza. Now, will Americans care at all about the fifth largest party boycotting them? I'm not sure, probably not. But I think Eastwood's decision will lead the way for all the parties here to spread what is an obviously important message regarding a ceasefire. So, indeed, the opposition, as anyone would undoubtedly commend the great ear of Human Trimble, Nobel Peace Prize laureate's peace at last, holding hands with Bono at the waterfront. There has been a decline from cross-community consensus, at least in government and political leadership in Northern Ireland, in general, since then. There has been a decline since, not only in the supposed relevance of moderate green and orange parties, but in the level of decent political concord. So to conclude, I recognise the SDLP's ways of declining alongside what I think is a decent party like the UUP. I admit a decline. Such declines have paved the road to further political division, a few absent governments here and there, and increased political disillusionment. My question to the opposition is simply thus, why would you not regret such a decline? Thanks for listening.
Hi, my name is Alex, and it's been 81 days since I last used OxyContin. As I'm sure most of you can tell, I'm not from around here. As someone born and bred in the South, I hold no place in pontificating before you this evening about the political hoopla of Northern Ireland, about the merits and drawbacks of multiple nationalist presences in the Assembly, and about the intricate differences in policies amongst the political groupings of the six counties. But I like to think that I can understand some of the broader issues faced by this corner of the world. Dare I say it, perhaps even more so than most. 81 days since I last used OxyContin. That sentence is being uttered in Narcotics Anonymous meetings around Northern Ireland right now. There are 8 of them taking place in Belfast alone as we speak. I've spent every one of those 80 nights thinking about every little thing that went wrong that led to me popping pills just as frequently as my colleague Dermot puffs on his funny little inhaler. An opioid dependency at 16 grants you that kind of time to think, I guess. But unfortunately, for a lot of people in Northern Ireland, more so than in the Republic, that is still reality. They still have that time to think. They'll have that time to think this evening when they go home from those Narcotics Anonymous meetings. Today is 81 days since I last used OxyContin. But it's 77 days since the last time the SDLP had something to say about Northern Ireland's opioid crisis. That was, of course, when Mark H. Durkin, who has been chair of the AGP on addiction and dual diagnosis for 4 years, told us that collaboration with the PSNI was required to tackle this crisis any further. Ladies and gentlemen, such collaboration with the Gardaí in my own community likely would have seen me locked up. It's 81 days since I last used OxyContin. It's 77 days since the SDLP last had a thought about it. It's 7,405 days since the House of Commons NI Affairs Committee, where the SDLP is of course the only Nationalist Party represented, issued a report detailing drug culture and overprescription in Northern Ireland. Since they and we were warned of the opioid crisis. Since my presence here today as a recovered addict, ladies and gentlemen, at just 19, was foreshadowed, was warned, was known about. A year before I was even born. And of course, ladies and gentlemen, I do not stand before you this evening and suggest that the SDLP are solely responsible for this crisis. Even I can acknowledge that to do so would be absurd. But let us face the facts. Sinn Féin were not represented on that House of Commons committee. The Alliance Party were not represented on that committee. They did not conduct the research. The DUP and the UUP, of course, were represented on it. And Lord above knows they have played their part. But they're not chairing committees on addiction and simultaneously suggesting to us that this is an issue for the PSNI to clean up. Even they have the shame about them to know better. Yet the SDLP, who have lambasted their unionist opponents for years for their stubborn commitment to their principles, have no shame. No shame in parading themselves as the party to represent nationalists in Westminster and then stabbing them in the back with their reluctance and refusal to do anything. And ladies and gentlemen, this is, as I'm sure you know, not the only case of the SDLP saying one thing and doing another. In 2016, of course, the SDLP, along with every single major party in Northern Ireland, welcomed the release of the Bengoa report. You might notice a trend of the SDLP either taking part in or welcoming the release of these reports. The report detailed the need to scale down or withdraw services from healthcare facilities across the country in the name of a greater standard of healthcare across the board. Yet, ladies and gentlemen, despite this, despite how they welcomed this, there are 5 articles on the SDLP website under the label of addiction. There is an entire section of this website complete with a petition to prevent the withdrawal of services from Daisy Hill. The SDLP tell us that this withdrawal of services is against the Department of Health's own guidance. And true, this may be. I do not stand before you as an agent of the Bengoa report.
If anything, I disagree with it. I've seen how the withdrawal of health services affect communities in the austerity years of my own community. But the difference is that where I'm from, these people and parties withdrawing services stand over their decisions to do so. The SDLP, on the other hand, turned their back on their history, on their own woeful ineptness, their own inability to exercise the foresight granted to them, but not always to other parties. Time and time again. Be it in addiction, be it in the withdrawal of health services, the SDLP don't just fear commitment. They loathe it. Because, ladies and gentlemen, with commitment comes accountability. Tonight, the proposition have and will put it to you that the SDLP are part of the fabric of Northern Irish politics. They will attempt to have you believe that their victories of the past are a license to continuously subject the people of the North to their cornucopia of failures. Failures in policy, failures in ideology, failures in basic human morality. I do not regret the decline of the SDLP because the SDLP do not regret my decline. The SDLP did not and do not regret the decline of thousands of people like me across the North. The SDLP, put simply, do not care for the North. They do not care for the most vulnerable. They do not care for me. And ladies and gentlemen, from where I'm stood, they do not care for you. Gareth Mílan Mógaf.
Evening. Once again, I stand before you all, having been drafted. So, for the second time in as many weeks, I would like to take you once more into the mind of Rory. Now, this will not be an easy thing to do. Rory's mind does not work in the same way as everyone else's. Trying to understand its processes is a lot like trying to put diesel in a petrol engine. But Rory was faced with a choice. You go into Rory's head and a book is left open and it says, someone called Matthew has pulled out. Now Rory went from his book and he thought of all the people that he could call upon to speak. He thought of James, then he remembered James as the secretary. He thought of Dermot, he's on that side. He thought of Kira, she'll take a fortnight. But Rory again decided to land upon me. So I apologise that this speech will not be as eloquent as other speeches we have heard this evening, but you'll have to bear with me for a short amount of time, as I was told I was doing this speech about an hour and a half ago. So, brace yourself. Yes, the only thing I can say about the SDLP really at the moment is my memories of campaigning for the SDLP in West Belfast. No, I was campaigning for the great and noble and victory-prone Alcan McSparran in the streets of West Belfast.
On that point?
If you must.
How many votes did Olga get?
That is of little relevance to this, I do not see the point. But we were representatives of the SDLP strolling down Leeson Street in West Belfast, and I suddenly realised we would be more welcome if we were wearing khaki and carrying Belgian rifles. Yes, I was coming on to that. The reason we should value the SDLP comes when we look at a case of a woman whose door we knocked on. We knocked on the door of an old woman. She came out. She said her name was Rita. She was wonderful. Anyway, she asked if the council could help weeding her garden and alley. And Alkin said he would do it. Now, the reason we should keep the SDLP is because who would there be to look down on when you don't have a party who says they'll weed an old woman's garden and then doesn't? I would like to take you all on a little trip to the wonderful land of North Korea. There's relevance here. Everyone knows who the leader of North Korea is.
Jack Sands.
Kim Jong-un. He controls the army, he controls the country, he controls everything there. But the head of state of North Korea is not Kim Jong-un. The official head of state of North Korea is Kim Jong-un's grandfather, Kim Il-sung, who died in 1994. This makes North Korea the world's only mortocracy, a country officially run by a dead person. This is with the notable exception of the SDLP, who every election time like to wheel out their corpses. Every year through the streets of South Belfast, Matthew O'Toole and Claire Hannah go forth, bring out your dead, bring out your dead. A suspicious amount of people on the electoral register who voted for the SDLP have the address of 314 Falls Road. This happens to be the exact address of Milltown Cemetery, where most of their voters remain to this day. Now you may be asking, why is this a good thing? And you may be saying, well, surely it's a bad thing for the SDLP. If you're run by dead people, the only natural place your voting can go is into the ground. But there is a reason for these seat losses. There's a reason this has happened. And that is because the dead are planning to come back to lead the SDLP. These good people are not running inefficient campaigns just for the fun of it. They are leading the way for people like Paddy Devlin and Jerry Fitt. Paddy Devlin is once again going to represent West Belfast. Jerry Fitt is once again going to represent, I don't know, Chelsea and Westminster, wherever he represented in his latter years. I haven't a clue, I'm still talking. I don't know how long 7 minutes have to go, and Rory stuck me on this for reasons that I will never be able to comprehend.
On that point?
Yes?
How about Alkins can't knock?
Eh?
He's not. Under a tennis
and I didn't hear him.
Alkin has a bizarre way of knocking.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. I'm not sure what that has to do with the decline of the SDLP, but yes, Alkin has a very distinctive knock. And it's to let the West Belfast people know when it's time to run out the back door. He goes... Yes, and... That's about all I can think of about the SDLP at the moment. If you didn't like this and thought it was mental, you can thank Rory at the pub. Thank you.
Where's my kids, sir? That should be there. For the... For the...
Did
you say no surrender there? Not no surrender, H.
Sam.
Hello.
Sam.
Yeah, still
here. Sam. That was a strange speech. That was one of the speeches of all time. That was definitely up there with Lord of the Rings fanfic for a person saying absolutely nothing at all. At all. I'm just kind of shitting on the stoop, so big up, Sam. But I'm going to deal with some of the interesting arguments put forward by the proposition. Except for Rita. Rita was wonderful. Sam felt things towards Rita. Sam often crosses his legs when we discuss Rita. Sam's a granny shagger, for anyone not aware. But there was an interesting kind of argument offered by the first and second propositions. Sam ignored this argument. In which they talked about, say we have this one national party. One nationalist party that ignores the factionalism. We all get together, have a big kind of green and green, white and orange kumbaya, and we all dance around the John Hume grave and be all very happy clappy about the stoops. And Daniel asked, what should that nationalist party look like? Yes, Fianna Fáil. But we'll get to that. It was such a beautiful idea, this great nationalist party. We would deliver a united Ireland and we'd all be great and we'd appeal to the undecideds.
On that point, we weren't arguing for a nationalist party, we're arguing for a broad base, and the SLP have a very important role to play in that.
I didn't accept your POI. And that's not what he said either. But he discussed what this nationalist party could look like. And he said, you know, would it be one that that sticks to the dogma of abstentionism in Parliament? You know, would it be one of the great tribalness of Sinn Féin? And what I ask the proposition, is it one that abstains on gay rights? Is it one that puts out the transphobic dogma that it does? You know, and then runs those people in East Belfast?
On that point...
No, I didn't accept your POI. Shut up. is it one, you know, it's one that could appeal to the undecideds? The people down the middle, the Alliance-y people, who all live in Bangor in South Belfast and love couscous, and you know, and they all work for PwC. And of course, the SDLP would be the people to appeal to those people. Of course they would. That's why Alliance took all the SDLP seats last election. That's why the SDLP can't get any votes off of these people, because the SDLP are so good at appealing to these people that they don't need them to vote for them, because they have them in their heads. The Stoops know they're going to vote for the brand new spanking nationalist party with SDLP colours, but they don't need to vote for the SDLP, because why would they? And you know, when I was prepping for this debate, you know, Rory and me discussed who we'd be having on it. And I was looking at, you know, who the SDLP could possibly send along. And I was discussing with members of the council, you know, oh, who might the Stoops send? And then I had, of course, heard that an SDLP representative told a member of council that they weren't going to dignify us by sending a representative. A party that is failing to connect with younger voters and can't get any more than 5% in the 18 to 25 category in polls is not going to dignify a university debating society with their representatives. They won't engage with young people. But then I got thinking, you know, maybe they will change their mind. Maybe they'll send a local councillor. And then I thought, who are my local councillors from the SDLP? And I was stumbled upon an article about a young man called Killian Feehan. Killian ran in my local DEA. Killian ran a fairly unsuccessful campaign. He ran alongside Pete Byrne, a local councillor, who I would say is a pretty good guy. And then I remembered that one day I went through Killian's tweets. This is Killian, who has just recently been co-opted to replace Michael Savage in Newry, on Newry Morning Down Council. And I discovered a tweet from Killian, in which, two tweets, one of them said, booking a charity abseil down the side of the Europa for school construction in Palestine, who'll sponsor me if I do it? Then he tagged a woman called Pamela Hart and said, you speak English like a drunk Asian. Yeah, we gots to give those kids a learning house where they can read and shit. That feels a little bit racist to me. Sorry, that feels really racist to me. And it really, really spoke to me. Because that's the calibre of person that the SDLP put forward for an election. And then whenever they lose that election, they go, you know what, you were such a good racist that we're going to co-opt you into the council. And I raised this with the SDLP members going, and I raised it with two of their council candidates. I sent it to their HQ, you know, saying maybe, you know, this has slipped through the cracks. This was before the election they ran him, and they knew about these tweets, they knew about his views, and still ran him for election. That's the calibre of the SDLP. So maybe we shouldn't regret them falling apart. But is that the kind of person you want running the country? People that come out and stuff like that? Or, you know, we can look at the Stoops. I mean, as I want to quote a good friend of mine who, on discussions of the socialist colours of the SDLP, the red of socialism that they love, and he pointed out dear Margaret Ritchie and their former leader, and he said a wonderful line: there's no greater Stoop, no greater definition of a Stoop than someone that stoops for British patronage and runs to the House of Lords. Because that's the kind of SDLP we have today. We have lords and ladies, as Tom pointed out, blatant racists on the council. We have people who fire out transphobic rhetoric in East Belfast. And then we have two former leaders abstaining on gay marriage. They offer all this influence. They offer the wonderful colours of societal progress. They tell us how wonderful they are. They tell us how they ought to lead us into New Ireland. But they put forward racism, transphobia, and they won't stand up for gay rights. They'll talk about how progressive they are, but then they won't take a position on abortion. And then they will take a position on abortion. And then some of them will abstain on abortion. Some of them will vote for abortion. Some of them vote against abortion. And then they'll hide about which position they take on abortion. So if you care about a woman's right to choose, maybe don't vote SDLP. If you care about anti-racist campaigns on your council, don't vote for the SDLP. If you care about same-sex marriage, don't vote for the SDLP. If you care about trans people, don't vote for the SDLP. And if you want to see a united Ireland, guess what? Don't vote for the SDLP. Take a leaf out of the book of people in Northern Ireland and vote for the opposition. Thank you very much.
Thank you for that, Dermot. We'll go for a round of questions. Just remember that we'll do a proposition question, opposition question, and then an abstaining question. Abstaining question needs to be a question that can be put equally to both sides. So firstly, do we have a proposition question, please? God.
If you don't ask a question, we can leave
it. Take it, there is none. Do I have a question for the opposition, please, Daniel?
That was a very nice political speech from Nevin Flynn Sinn Féin. I only came in during the last sort of half of the debate. I saw Sam's nagging with us. Not much else. Now, I don't know, but the point that you put forward was that the SDLP's in the shambles. Was that not kind of their point? They regret the fact that it's in a shambles, and it once was a part of it was certainly to be admired, if not agreed with. Was that not their point?
No, not really. The point is, you know, this has risks. They didn't really kind of put forward a point a lot of the time, which I can. Other than Sam, who offered a wonderful point, which is actually it. You see, this has risks that the plan of the SDLP suggests, at least what they didn't really offer, suggests that this House of Representatives, perhaps children, this House of Representatives actually were voted by the SDLP. And the point I put forward is that why would we regret the decline of the current SDLP, you know, going from kind of, you know, in the last decade to the current one? But in that time, they put in, you know, racists and not very nice people consistently, and have done so. So it isn't really that they have. That they regret the decline of the SDLP going from wonderful people like John Hughes. It's more so that they can't win an election.
Thank you. Proposition to respond?
Okay, I'll ask you a question. I think that's a valid point. I think most of these did spend a lot of time trying to talk about why the SDLP has declined, and respectfully didn't really do that much to explain that anyway, given one of Dermot's main points was that one of the reasons, or the state of the modern SDLP is so much worse than it used to be, is because Margaret Ritchie took a peerage. I'm sort of ignoring the fact that Jerry Phipps took a peerage years and years and years ago when the SDLP was in tight and was supported. But he's still associated a lot with it anyway. But and then talking about wishy-washy stuff with gay marriage and stuff, that they're since quite strong supporters of gay marriage now that they've got rid of people like Dolores Kelly.
Read it, that's what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah.
Give me a
Do we have an abstaining question? Jonathan?
What would each side say the decline of the SDLP is? Because I think it's been like, it's not been very clear. I feel like the opposition has more argued that the SDLP has declined rather than that they don't regret the decline. So what have they declined from? What does each side consider the decline of the SDLP to actually be?
We'll put to the proposition first.
Yeah, well, I mentioned in the first couple of sentences that they've obviously defined electorally. I think they've defined equality to some degree. They're relying on a sort of, 25-year-old image of the past, that their leadership is potentially declined. I mean, no one really is the same image of John Hume or the image of either side of the political aisle. But that's basically what it is. It's not just the electoral success for the SDLP that's went on. I think it's went on in many qualities. And the notion, indeed, that a hypothetical nationalist political party could come forward, I said, and that was quite unrealistic, I don't think it's realistic that the SDLP would ever come together and get as much influence as it did on the John Hume. I specified that. And that is actually kind of our point. That the SDLP has declined and it might be some degree irreversible in both the electoral sense and the quality of the party.
Opposition, please.
I think this is kind of one of those ones where knowing kind of certain debate motions work, because typically with this House of Reps motion, the proposition puts forward an alternative view of what would happen if the SDLP hadn't and as pointed out, they have it done. And they pointed that out and said, which was, and as we kind of took it, the decline of the SDLP was them being the largest nationalist party, on the search and tell me how many MPs they had in 1998 to they had three, four in 1992. So the decline of being the dominant nationalist party with more people in it. With more elected reps and being the government party in comparison to being a minor party, not it isn't about like no one is going to argue that against a political party. No one can say, "Oh, it's great that a political party has gotten by that." That would be ridiculous. And the attempts to kind of make that feel the base kind of swirling on the proposition part, handing back faith, in my opinion. And I just don't think that is really how the motion works, because they haven't put forward a view as to what would happen if the SDLP hadn't actually declined. And we've put forward a view of why we shouldn't be doing that.
Thank you. Just try that again. If anyone has a question for the proposition, you can ask it now. Go on then, Ryan.
I don't know if really fully prompted, however, it's probably more of an abstaining question. So, which is, in all situations, we usually ask the same question to the direct response on side, but this isn't a proposition question, which can be directed to my side. But anyway, how does the SDLP come back? Like, if the proposition's argument that the SDLP is, we regret that the SDLP is declined, what does it need to do, and why for it to come back, and why should we want that to happen?
So I think it's, in the medium to long term, it's the division of caring around pretty identified people, and I believe the SDLP are probably best place to actually convince people across the board for the benefit of that. I think the SDLP suffers from being, in the past, very much a broad church, bringing people, on the every wing, in the holy wing, the old blue church, very much. But I think going forward, you do kind of see it consigning around a more labour vision, generally, but still a different issue than that. I think if it can put forward a bit more forth a bit more behind the front and really focus on the message of the positives of the United Ireland. I think that was its purpose. Yeah.
Position to respond?
I think you said at one point earlier on in the debate, I can understand to an extent why people would think that the SDLP have a better chance of leading the way to United Ireland than Sinn Féin, because a lot of people don't like Sinn Féin. But more people don't like the SDLP to the extent that people have stopped voting for the SDLP. So to get from a point where no one's voting for your party to get everyone voting for United Ireland is a massive big jump. If nationalists won't vote for the Stoops, unionists aren't going to vote for United Ireland because the SDLP is leading. There's also, I think there's a general sort of global trend of sort of a bit of decline in social democratic parties. The SDLP is part of that, but also a lot of, I think, their decline is down primarily to their own actions and their own inactions and inability to deal with their actions and their inactions. So is the way back to the SDLP? I don't think so, and I think they've... Maybe it's fitting given everything Sam told us about the SDLP being all dead people. Perhaps they've buried themselves and they've dug their own grave a wee bit. I don't personally see a way back to the SLP. I don't think people want to see a way back to the SLP. I don't think there's a need for the SLP.
Thank you. Do we have any more questions for the opposition?
More for the opposition.
Yes, I just call out an Ambrose. I know I have like big questions around the progressive nature of the SLP because I think, you know, we talked about marriage there. And obviously it was the first time I had a motion for equal marriage that generated majority support in the Assembly. We talked about abortion, common power voted for decriminalisation of abortion in Westminster while Alliance still has a conscience position, and Sinn Féin has a 12 week gestational period and then staying on faith with the Matrimonial Bill. We talked about racism, our big national rival, keeping up with protests that are happening outside hotels where certain members of our biggest national rival are standing on platforms. So I think the idea of being just as non-progressive, like I'll be the first to admit that every party can be more progressive, but when you're saying that we're non-progressive, that we don't have a record standing on in terms of progressivism, that's not accurate. So.
All right, let's deal with that. Let's deal with all of those points, actually. Okay. I really thought the abortion one you brought up. You brought up how Sinn Féin abstained on the abortion bill, but didn't bring up the fact that your party voted for it. Your party. Justin McNulty voted for the bill.
Yes.
Don't try and get
Can we not have any back and forth, please? Please, can we keep it?
Justin McNulty voted for the bill. Patsy McGlow voted for the McGlynn. Sinead McLaughlin opposed it, yes, but a majority of the SDLP MLAs voted for it. Similar. When it came to the final draft of the bill, Sinn Féin opposed that bill wholeheartedly. The SDLP majority supported that bill in limiting access to abortion. So if we're going to talk about Sinn Féin's record on abortion on a bill in which the SDLP supported actively going out and limiting access to abortion, let's not bring that bill up if you're trying to talk about how good the SDLP's record on abortion is. Similarly, when I do believe it was Daniel McGross, an SDLP MLA for West Tyrone. Whenever there was a situation, for those of you not kind of old enough to remember, or whenever the assembly was collapsed in 2017, there was an agreement that there was a bill passed by your man McGinn, former Labour MP, that. In the event that the Assembly wasn't backed up by it, I think it was the 17th of October, 21st possibly, that the Secretary of State must bring in gay marriage and abortion into Northern Ireland. The only nationalist MLA who wanted to go out and oppose that bill in order to further stop access to gay marriage and abortion was Danny McCrossan of the SDLP. There's that point. There's also, I love that dear friend across the House failed to bring up the fact that the SDLP ran a candidate in 2022 who fired out loads of transphobic rhetoric towards trans people. So, okay. If we're going to talk about how progressive the SDLP is, let's not bring up these times when the SDLP weren't
progressive. We'll move on and let the proposition respond, please.
Yes, okay, my dear sir. Well, yes, I would agree that it is a moot point to start talking about when exactly each party became progressive on any sort of issue. Because the arguments of all the other parties were always these, you know, looking forward and really progressive, and the SDLP were the ones dragging the middle stone. You know, and the other thing you brought up about the tweets, you brought it up in the speech again by a candidate who similar racist things on Twitter. I would never stop my head. I don't think we should have co-opted them and anything. But, I mean, it doesn't sit well that
in Northern Ireland, the SDLP, for the people who've sent dodgy tweets, I mean, the party you just joined, I mean, no, there's not...
No, back and forth, please. Can we please keep on to this, don't we? Back and forth. Carry on.
Oh, right. Well, yes, other parties, sorry. I mean, the SDLP, for instance, have never opposed with groceries balanced on their heads, dog baiting with two bottles of Merlot in it, why women shouldn't be allowed submarines, and John Taylor, most of the DUP, everybody else.
Quiet, please.
Specifically SDLP problem. Just people who are on Twitter are idiots, is the point of my name.
Thank you. Can we have any abstaining questions? No? Okay, we'll move on to the vote of speaker ability. This is a vote on the side that you thought spoke best, not necessarily on the side you picked for the motion. So everybody who thought the proposition spoke the best, please raise your hands. No. Or hander. Seven. Are we voting for ourselves here or? Eight. Nine. I don't know where you got 14 from.
If I say 14, it needs to be a little bit more people here. So.
Five. If you believe the opposition spoke the best, please raise your hand now. You're voting twice.
One, two, you've voted twice. 17.
And if you want to abstain on the motion, please raise your hand now. Nine. We have the vote of speaker ability, please.
There were 14 votes for the proposition, 17 for the opposition, according to the president, and 9 abstentions. So by, after some adjudicating, sort of like wet from out of sight to really work, one side winning, one moment mentally, ballot box appears nowhere, the opposition had it.
Thank you all for coming along. Remember, we have the Geoffrey Donaldson Lit Talk on Thursday. You can get your free place on our Eventbrite, which is very well timed Lit Talk, I must say. And then on the 8th of February, we are back in here for this house as Truman would drop the bomb. If you want to speak on any of our term card motions this semester, please click the link in the Instagram bio and fill out the form, and our internal convener, whose birthday it is, will contact you. Happy birthday, Rory.
Have we given birthday greetings?
No.
Are we saying happy birthday?
Okay. Maybe this can happen at the pub, but happy birthday, Rory. Thank you all for coming along, and we'll be back in here on the 8th.
And we're all on the poster upstairs.
Thank you very much.